You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
That's right. You can't handle the truth. But let me introduce you to a friend of mine from Texas who can handle the truth. Michael Musselman. That's right. The Gunner here on All Marine Radio. Gunner, what's up? How are you?
What's going on?
Nothing.
I seek out the truth.
Like a heat-seeking missile, he seeks out the truth. Haven't had you on in a couple days, so let me ask you this question. Fires and Amtraks in the crew compartment. You ever seen one of those?
No. Other than purposely set, no. I mean, some crew guy trying to make his lunch with a stove heater or something, no. It's like very, very rare. I mean, sure, it's happened. I have never heard one.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because nobody I've spoken to Amtrakers, and they said, you know, we've heard of, you know, like we would use like fuel to shine up the engine for inspection, right? And like sometimes, you know, that would get hot and catch fire afterwards, and we'd have engine compartment fires, or something like that. But so anyway, and you were the division gunner when the last Amtrak incident that I can recall was the Micklet thing out in 29 Palms. Is that completely different? Yes.
Yeah, that was completely different.
Okay. All right. So so I guess we'll wait for a better explanation. But right now, somewhat of a head scratcher. So what have you been doing?
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
Our sister service, the U.S. Army. I think it was 4 were killed, a bunch were wounded during the Special Forces class in Fort Bragg yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, as they were making some homemade explosives, which is part of the school. You know, you got to learn how to do that stuff because you don't have those kind of things available to you, especially in a far off world when you're trying to teach, you know, counterinsurgency to a bunch of little guerrillas that you're trying to train. So, yeah, I hope that everything works out for those gentlemen that are going through this now, and you know, prayers out to the families that lost their guys.
The email, Mac, you mentioned Brook Army Medical Center in Texas, the burn unit there. I've never been there. I've heard great things about it. Have you ever been there? I have not. I've seen the work they've done, which is pretty incredible. Mike, have you ever been there?
No, I've never been there, but yeah. It's one of the most, it's like one of the renowned burn centers in the world.
Yeah.
So.
No, I remember, you see some of the guys that come out of it and they tell you about their experience there and the way they get treated. And there's a, I remember seeing, I want to say it was Denzel Washington down there. He had raised a bunch of money for him. And he wanted to go down to see it, and they hosted him on some visit. And I'll tell you what, he does a lot of stuff for veterans, and you don't see it on TV, which tells you what kind of dude he is. I remember Eric Smith, who's now the commanding general of the 1st Marine Division. He had a guy from 1-5 that was burned pretty badly in Ramadi, and he came on and was talking about the family going down there and living and all the different things that were being done down there and how appreciative he was of the support and whatnot. So, I have yet to hear anybody say anything bad about that place. And so, which is quite rightly.
No,
so.
Everything I've heard is really positive.
Another email. Mac, in terms of fire retardant clothes, I thought most of what Marines wore now is fire retardant. Is that the case?
Yes.
Mike, you want to talk about just
Amtrakers. Amtrakers definitely wear the crew wear fire retardant, you know, from head to toe. So
what about normal Marines?
The frog gear. The frog is you know, the stuff that we wore in Afghanistan and Iraq with the camouflage sleeves and then the tan chest, that is fire retardant as well. The problem comes into is a lot of those things are, it's the heat, the initial, you know, buildup of heat that causes most of the injuries.
Explain that.
The heat bloom itself. So, I mean, it's like, well, don't do this experiment, but, you know, if you have your oven on broil and, you know, it's 500 something freaking degrees and you open the door and your face is right there, you feel that heat bloom and it hurts, that pain. Now imagine that, you know, that 2,500 degrees is that heat, that initial explosion goes off, that initial fire catches, and now you breathe that air in and it affects your eyes, your nostrils, your respiratory system.
Got it.
So this is where a lot of your injuries come. Not a lot of, you know, burn, you know, second, third degree burns on the outside skin. That stuff protects it to a degree. But when it gets real damn hot, you know, in some of those things, doesn't matter if you're wearing firefighting clothes, you're going to burn.
Right. Right. So when we talk fire retardant, what are we talking about? Are we talking about?
We're talking about something that doesn't catch fire immediately upon contact.
Okay.
You know, so.
But there is truth. There is truth to that old adage, that old, and I say it, and it made me laugh the first time I ever heard it. But, and I was a captain and at the basic school, we're out doing a tactics problem one night. It was night patrolling or something. And it was one of those nights in Quantico, Mike, where it was just that East Coast heavy rain, and it started at like 3 p.m, and it just all night, and you're just soaking wet, and it's not stopping. And it was March, so most of the easy firewood had already been filched. So we were just the headquarters, the admin headquarters for the problem. So I can't remember the gunny who was helping out. He sends these PFCs. He says, "Go find me some wood," and all the wood they bring back, they come back and like, "Gunny, it's not going to burn. It's all green wood." And he looked at me and said, "Son, everything burns. You just got to get it hot enough. Get me the MoGas." And so, but I mean, there is truth to that. I mean, you could say fire retardant, but there's no such thing as fire resistant. Everything burns, and you do just have to get it hot enough. And if you do, then that stuff will melt too. So it's a minimum amount of protection that guys wear. And that's his sleeves down, Mike, in the vehicle. I mean, they're part of a McCree. So they're tactical. In the back of that vehicle, they would, you know, sleeves down, their battle gear on, helmets on, all of that on, which a lot of that stuff will at least provide some initial protection. But if the explosion that you're talking about happens like that, that's going to be pretty intense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, brother.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about, do you have a solution for the immigration problem?
You know, actually, right when you said it, I'm watching a bunch of immigrants being arrested on TV. You know, and they're all, but these are all El Salvadorians coming across the border, and they walked right into a bunch of policemen, and they're going somewhere. Do you have a solution for immigration?
Yeah, let me give you the parameters. On the right side, we have the wall. On the left side, we have amnesty. In the middle, we have dreamers, and then we have the dreamer parents. And then we have visa people in there as well. So is there some kind of compromise that everybody's unhappy with that allows us to get beyond this?
Yeah, because you got your extreme... It's a extreme left. They think that there should be no borders. People can walk just across from Mexico, and anybody that comes, steps into America and says, "You know what, I'd be American," you just give them citizenship. There you go, partner. Because it's the social welfare program. You know, don't worry about a job. Don't worry about anything. Here's your paycheck. You're going to get this, you know, as long as you live, because we are such a great nation and da 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 da. And then when they're asked the question of, well, who's going to afford this, they say, well, I don't know. Figure it out. No, that's not an answer. I'm all for that if there was a way to fund that where we didn't put the burden on the people of the United States, the people that are living the American dream. You know, hey, come to America, live the American dream. If you come as an immigrant, that's the greatest American dream, because you don't have to work. You get a paycheck, you know, and you get to live. But if you're born in America and you're born in the poverty line, well, too bad. You know, you're American. You got that going for you. But you're not going to get the same benefits as that illegal immigrant coming across the border. That's bullshit. So, you know, and then your extreme right is you put up some kind of Berlin Wall up with dogs and mines and, you know, attack helicopters patrolling the border, and anybody comes near it, you kill them. I'm not for that either. You know, mine is somewhere in the middle. I'm a strong believer. You have to secure your borders. And if that's a wall, a fence, people standing hand to hand all the way down, I mean, figure it out, but we have to secure our borders. We got to keep people coming here illegally. If people are in a foreign country and they're just, you know, like El Salvador or Nicaragua, you hear about that all the time, you know, and it's horrible down there. I get it.
Right.
But people trying to seek asylum and trying to become Americans, they apply. Now, the problem is the bureaucracy and the administrative bullshit that goes into the State Department, you know. So there's one of the biggest problems. So all these lefties that are actually in the State Department and everything else, you know, if it was so perfect and they're so good at it, they would have solved their problem years ago. But they can't. And so this whole problem of how you apply for visa and how it works, come into the country legally, you know, and then you're on a temporary visa, find a job, start paying taxes, start living the American dream. And then don't go home. Yeah. And then renounce your citizenship of where you came from. Because every other country does it the same way. You know, France, this great country that all these left people use as a model, or any European country, if you go there as an American citizen and you want to be a French citizen, guess what? They say, you can't keep it. The only other thing is if you're born, you get to keep dual citizenship abroad.
If you're born, so if you're an American or if you're French and you're born in the United States, then you get to keep be dual citizenship. But if you're an immigrant and you immigrate to France.
Most of them, yeah.
You immigrate to France.
And then most of the European nations have an assimilation process for immigrants. You know, look at Switzerland. Switzerland, who's very, very liberal, they have a program where you must assimilate and learn French, Swiss, must go through Swiss type of things. Otherwise, you're out. You know, no one bashed Switzerland for kicking a Muslim family out because the daughters just refused to go swimming in gym class. Sorry, go. That's the way we do it in Switzerland. We're not going to make any concessions, you know, for you. If you want to live in Switzerland, then you got to be a Swiss. You're not going to live in Switzerland and be this in Switzerland. No. And that's the problem with America. It's more like a salad bowl where instead of a mixing bowl, you come here and be American. No, you got people coming here and being Mexican, living in, you know, the United States, flying the Mexican flag outside their house or their establishment, and not ever trying to learn the language.
Okay, so on the right side, we say no wall, but the southern border will be secure.
And northern border, man. Canada is just as bad, if not worse, than the southern border.
Not numerically. Is no border. Okay, I agree with you.
Most of our bad people come in from Canada because there's no border. There's a freaking cone in a road.
That's not a joke either. That's the truth. I know because I've driven around them.
Yeah. I mean, they do their best, and it's changed a little bit now. I mean, but not every road going into Canada and Mexico from Minnesota has got a checkpoint. And even if it does, you walk 40 feet to the right or left, and you go around it.
Go around them. Yeah, it's not hard. And it's so, sparsely populated up there. you get on a, somebody gets on a snowmobile, right, in Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, right? Well, Wisconsin harder because of the lakes, but certainly Minnesota, yeah. Northwest Minnesota, North Dakota, or Montana, you just get on that and you drive north. Go pick up whoever you want to pick up, turn around and come back. It ain't that hard. It's pretty wide open. But I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about solving the immigration border. So number one, the border has to get secured. Okay, two, I want you to talk about the Dreamer people, and then I want you to talk about their parents. Their parents, their first act when they came to the United States was to commit a crime by coming here illegally. But we're not deporting them. We're not going to deport 10 million people. We all know that. Okay, so what do we do? Somebody wrote in a little bit ago and offered this. Okay, they plead guilty to some kind of misdemeanor / felony. I don't really know what it is. Crime that would be charged by the INF. They would be found guilt. They would plead guilty to that. They would be put on probation for a period of time, 5 to 10 years. And if they completed that successfully, there would be a path to citizenship or some form of legal status for those people. The Dreamers would be granted something similar on a much shorter basis, though. They would be in some kind of probationary period for 12 to 24 months. If there are no felonies on their record, they would have a path towards citizenship. People with visas, he didn't really talk about. So talk about those three groups, how you would. And so on the other side of this, the wall's on one side. On the left side is amnesty, okay? And so in order for us to kind of get beyond this whole immigration issue and deal with it, understanding we're not deporting 11 million people, how do you deal with each one of those groups? So which one do you want to start with? Dreamers, parents, or visas?
Shit, Mac. You know, you're talking to the wrong guy, because I'm on the thing of, if you came here illegally, you go. I know it's not. That's the way I think. It's like, I just don't. No, I don't want him here.
All right. So what do you think about the Cleveland Indians winning streak?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of it. You know, it's a bunch of reasons. One, because it was flawed legislation that got him here. You know, it was the president abusing his authority for, and again, then Congress not doing shit to do anything about it.
So hello. But that's
multiple.
That's just about any issue we talk
failures.
About.
Failures.
Right. Any issue we talk about, you could start it with Congress hasn't done shit to address the problem. No.
Right. They keep kicking, punting that. They're not kicking. They're punting that can down the road. And if you do that, if you do bring them in and you do this stuff, no, you don't let them vote. They can't vote. And the reason why is it's 10 million liberal votes. And what's wrong with that? Because they think that, again, the handouts, and is the way to live. And I can't live with 10 million liberal votes added to the,
added to the populace.
New,
okay. All right.
No.
So that's the political piece of it. If
we do, then we get the lottery pick 10 million other liberals that are Americans, and then they go. One for one. I can live with that.
He stays, you go. You're not being very helpful in all this. Here's a text message. Why don't we just clean up our current system to make it realistic? It must include its assimilation.
Why don't we look for the yellow brick road to the land of Oz, too, while we're at it?
Ooh.
I mean, if we're going to be living in that fantasy world.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's...
Well,
boy,
I mean, I could
from,
say that...
Is it from Montana Man?
Yeah, Montana Man. It's snowing in Montana right now.
Yeah, maybe the cold air is, like, affecting his brain today.
because what you're telling me is that you're okay with us not dealing with it because, and again, I could see that not be allowed to vote. I don't have a problem with that. Citizenship, yeah. but you're not going to vote. Your kids are going to vote, but you're not. Okay. If that gets us to the center and gets us beyond this thing, then I'm fine with it. But the problem is, Mike, what happens is the Democrats and Republicans, they'll turn their backs on each other, and we have what we have, which is maybe the way it will always stay. I think that the Dreamers, their children will get taken care of, but maybe because of the politics, maybe it's just a question that is just too much for the nation. We'll secure the southern border because the president will do that. The Dreamers will get dealt with, and then everybody else will just act like they're not here, and they'll continue to do what they do because we can't solve the problem politically. Do you think that that's the most probable course of action?
I don't know. I just hope that something is figured out soon because this is just getting ridiculous.
You're not much help. Just so you know.
No, because I'm my view on immigration is again, you know what it is. It's stop it coming in, make it legal. Those that came here illegally, and I don't care, they came under good intentions, they still came in illegally. They go.
They go. They're not going though. That's the problem, man. You're giving me like a non-starter right out of the starting gate. Right out of the starting gate, it doesn't start. But okay, I'm with you. It's part of the beauty that is Michael Musselman. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm stuck. That was.
Hey, did you watch it?
You said
you watched it.
I'm in the middle of part two. Of all the things that you, Mike, the other, and I've told people to watch it, but the History Channel has a series. It's three parts. I think each part is about 90 minutes. And you can actually, while you're at work today, you can either watch it on the computer or you can, if you download the History Channel app on your phone, you could watch it on your phone. Like, why work today? Honestly, like, who cares? It's Friday. So, I'm in the middle of the second part, okay? But it is, and I asked Mike this, he and I were talking the other day. I asked him, is this like there was like 6 million pieces of data, and then after 9/11 in 2001, they went back and they said, oh, see, there's the real clue. Is this something like that, Mike? And Mike?
No.
No. It's amazing.
Oh. Yeah, it is like eye opener, shocking. Like you, what? Yeah,
they knew. You know, Ramzi Youssef was the original guy who wanted to knock down the World Trade Center, and you know, you hear these guys talking, and they explain to you they tried to blow one up, and they wanted to knock it into the other one. That was the original plan. And then he gets out of New York City, and they find him in the Philippines. And then his uncle, is it his uncle or his cousin, is Sheikh Khalid Muhammad. And then
his uncle.
Yeah, Ramzi Youssef, he gets yoked up. And they said, you know, he's a tough guy. These guys were not like, these guys had fought the Russians. They had been involved in all of that. And these guys were tough guys, and the interrogator from the Philippines, and in the Philippines they don't have Miranda rights, just so you know.
Right. Yeah. Oh no.
They will. Everybody's heard of the concept of rendition. Mike, tell everybody what rendition is.
They use torture, like barbaric, you know, torture back from they. Because they're Catholic, they probably used it from back in the day of Spanish Inquisition.
Easy now. Easy. The
No, they do.
It hasn't evolved much.
No. I mean, they even said through multiple interrogations using electroshock or, you know, and all this other stuff, it was like, you know, they were trying to get information from this guy.
Yeah, so what rendition is we have him, but we can't really do anything to him. So we asked the Philippines, hey, would you like to, like, hang out, have this guy over and hang out with him for a while? They're like, yeah, no problem, buddy. And they take him off our hands, and they put him through a meat grinder and see if he'll talk. And then they tell us either if he does talk. That's what rendition is. So, and the guy, they interviewed the interrogator, and they said, no, he's a tough guy. He's a tough guy.
Yeah.
He was mad because he didn't have enough money to do it right. And so he gets captured, and then Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, he takes all the plans that this guy has, Ramzi Youssef, and this is in like 95, 96. So this is how far this plot to blow up the World Trade Center goes, and they knew of the plan that he had to try to knock out 12 airliners in the sky. And so there was always this conspiracy about aviation and this focus on knocking tall buildings down. And this
right.
this goes back, and they're talking about it, and it's like 1995. So, Mike, let me ask you, are you done watching it yet?
Oh, yeah. I binged and went like almost 6 hours straight. I went 4.5, 5 hours and then couldn't make it. And then the next day I finished the last hour.
All right. Of all the things that you saw in it, what moved you the most? What either frustrated you?
What moved me the most?
Yeah. What did you find most compelling in it? Give me a couple things that you found most compelling in it.
The fact that we were so close. You know, we were so close to making 9/11 never happen. It could, you know, like a bunch of the FBI guys and detectives said, it shouldn't have happened. It should have never happened because people don't understand. And again, it's not like the cat and mouse where we almost got them. We almost got them like nine times. But people, certain people, politicians being most of them, just didn't have the stomach to pull the trigger. You know? That's the part that is just kind of mind-boggling to me. And, you know, at a bare minimum, we had 9 chances to make sure 9/11 never happened. That's just disturbing to me. And then the other thing that really kind of pissed me off.
Okay, Mike, let me ask you this. You are no stranger to target packages and targeting and there's certain people that rise to certain levels of threats when we go to war that they can be shot. They're like on a list that says shoot them if you see them. You don't even have to try to take them prisoner. Kill them. Okay.
Right.
And then you have then you have to have bona fide opportunities to kill them. So when you say we had 9 opportunities,
nine. This guy had already been indicted, a federal indictment, and it had already been issued a kill, not a capture, kill on site. He was the number one guy that we were looking for. But then my second thing was the sharing information. You had CIA tracking them outside of the United States. You had FBI worrying about the internal security of the United States, and the CIA would not share the information with the FBI, nor would the FBI share with the CIA. Because, you know, and when you had one comment when they were sending this cable forward on KSM, the FBI guys did a cable, because everything in the CIA was electronic, sent a cable up to the top guys, because, hey, they're going to have this meeting, and here he is, there's an opportunity. We can get this guy in the open. The CIA said no. They didn't want to, when the FBI guy went to the guy's desk who was sitting on it and said, why aren't you forwarding this up? And he goes, this is a CIA matter. And then to find out that the CIA was the guys that were actually in the United States. So the part of the Al-Qaeda operatives that were part of the 9/11 plane hijacking and then the actual flying them in bombs, they were in, they came into the United States almost a year before. The CIA knew it. They were in San Diego in broad daylight with these plans well ahead of this 9/11. And they never told the FBI that these guys came in on visas into San Diego and were now living normal lives in San Diego because the CIA was trying to turn them and make them operatives. And it backfired on them. They disappeared shortly before 9/11, and then they finally issued the all hands, the be on the lookout, you know, for these guys to the FBI. But it was already too late. They couldn't find them now, and then now it was like they said, when they finally found who the passenger manifest of who was on that plane, and there was the Al-Qaeda operatives. And the one FBI guy says, I can't live with myself. To know that if we would have had this information before, we could have prevented this. You know, we could have prevented this.
Honestly, I mean, it's astounding. I didn't think they had the kind of information that they had. And as you sit there and watch it,
they had home addresses. They were wiretapping. They had more information than you can possibly imagine. And they're not showing all of the information they had because a lot of that stuff's classified because they can't disclose how they got it.
Right.
So, you know, if they're showing us that mountain of evidence they had, Mac,
right. Could you
there's a bigger mountain of stuff that they're not telling us.
Right. No,
people
gone to jail.
For the things they did, for allowing this to happen. If you see something and you watch it go down, if a woman is getting ready to walk into a street and get hit by a car, and you're standing in the crosswalk watching her on the same side she entered, and you keep your hands in your pockets and you just watch because you want the entertainment, you're going to jail too. But why not in other places? This is the same thing. They stood there and watched. And like they said, we knew something was going to happen. We just didn't know it was that. Well, fuck. If it's one American civilian that might lose his life, don't you think it's worth it? I do.
They don't.
No, they were trying to play, like he said, they're trying to play this James Bond shit, turn of guy that's into an informant that was going to be in Al Qaeda.
Mike, do you buy when they say, "Well, we really didn't understand the game we were involved in"? Do you buy that?
No. They, as you know, Mac, as you continue to watch that, you're going to see they were putting it, they were adding it all together. Planes were they were turning into their MO. How they're going to inflict the most damage, and they just didn't know what, you know. And they tell you in the show why the Twin Towers, why, because the Twin Towers came out of, you know, the ashes of World War II, and then they were designed and built, but they were a symbolism of capitalism, you know, on the financial district, everything. They were the symbol of America's growing opportunity of capitalism, you know, so they had to fall. They had to go down.
I've got an email for you. Mac, a few days ago when I heard you guys talking, I began to watch this. I'm not watching at work, so don't hate me. I watch it at home. It is pretty amazing. And I have to say that I am shocked at how much we did know. In terms of prevention, though, does Mike actually think that it could have been prevented?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, no one knows for sure the prevention. You never know what you've prevented. Like all the bad guys that we took out in Afghanistan or Iraq, and we took out some not major league, like a KSM type guy, but we took out some in the local area. You would know right away, because we would suffer, you know, in Iraq, for instance. We were suffering at one time an IED or 2 to 3 IED strikes a day in certain regions. And when we did the link analysis on intelligence and we finally got the bomb maker, the financier, and the parts guy, and we took those guys out, the shit would just disappear.
Right.
And you know you got the right guy. And then it would go months without an IED, not even an IED. And then every once in a while when an IED strike would go, then when they would do the post-class analysis, they would always, you know, that thing had been in the ground 3 or 4 months. We'd missed it. It was part of the original package of this guy. But when you took out the right guy, shit stopped. So, yeah. You know, I saw it firsthand on a much lower, low level. But when you take out, you know, certain guy, this is not the proverbial, you chop the head off, another one grows in its place, or the seven-headed snake, you know, the Medusa head. No, in a lot of cases, this is organized crime. So if you take out the crime boss, the mafioso, all the lieutenants and captains and the financiers and the distributors, it's gone.
Here's another question.
It is gone.
Here's another one. Mac, ask Gunner if he would place more blame on the Clintons or the Bushes or both.
Both. Equal blame. I'd place the blame of not acting on the evidence on the Clintons, but then the bullshit of when the Bush administration took over and when the Clinton administration briefed them on these guys, they were kind of in that, who's a scared of the boogeyman? Not us. What are you talking about, this guy? You know, this guy, what are you guys are crazy? You know, that kind of whole thing. But yeah, and then when you see, Mac, it's going to talk, and then it's going to piss you off. I don't know if you're there yet. But when they talk about the Iraq war, where Rumsfeld told Shelton, who was the chairman, you know, don't take the, because right when this went down, Rumsfeld tells Bush in his ear, let's go after Iraq. Well, and Bush said, well, what does Iraq have to do with it? Rumsfeld, really nothing, but let's just go after him anyway. This is a great opportunity. And Bush said, no, we're going to Afghanistan. So they did. And Rumsfeld turns to the chairman and says, don't take the plans off. I'm not done with this yet. Even though all of the other cabinet said the same thing of, you know, hey, Iraq has nothing to do with this.
That'll ruin my weekend to see that.
Oh, you're going to hate Rumsfeld more than you already hate him. And I hate him pretty damn bad, too. But when you see this, and then you see the bullshit of the, you know, the fabricated lies that Rumsfeld had he was responsible for doing just to get into that. Oh, you know, and then because all of the smart people said exactly what we said, because you didn't have a plan in place, phase 4 and phase 5, and all you want to do is remove this shithead because you didn't like them, and you were part of the administration that, you know, had to deal with them. Now you got to deal with them again, and now you just want to, you know, exact revenge on this guy. But you want a plan in place. When we took it down, that's where Al-Qaeda grew. Because, you know, before the Iraq war, we were beating them up pretty good, and they were down to lower than 300 people in Al-Qaeda. We invaded Iraq. Their recruitment went from 300 to like 3,000 overnight. Because now he gave him a purpose.
I'm not going to watch it anymore because okay. I want to change the subject because I just read a headline in an article today that talked about Iraq once again, right, finds itself where we were at the end of the war, right? Now what?
Uh-huh.
Now what? There was just 60 people killed in southern Iraq, Mike, in southern Iraq, which tends not to have too many people get killed because it's all Shiite, right? In southern Iraq, 60 people killed in bombings on Friday, yada, 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 as the Islamic State morphs into the guerrilla war again. So how does that nation go forward if you don't partition it? Jared Durant's been on the program from Baghdad saying, look, they don't even think they can go forward without partitioning the nation, a revenue-sharing agreement, and they live in some kind of confederation. You know, but it's just,
right.
It's just, and again, Rumsfeld, Seth, Bush, Wolfowitz, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, right? They set all that in motion. So I want to play a little audio for you. So it's Steve Bannon. So I want to play a little bit of Bannon, and I want you to comment on it, okay? So stand by, listen up.
Her very first speech when she came off the beach.
Okay, this is about Hillary Clinton.
Was nonsense. And this goes to something that I want to address with you. Hillary Clinton's not very bright. Everybody says she's so smart, so much smarter than Donald Trump. She doesn't really have a grasp. She doesn't have a grasp on what's important and what's not. And that's what's essential in a leader. Donald Trump has a grasp on what's important and what's marginalia.
What else?
Okay, and she came out. That speech of hers is an embarrassment. Breitbart, alt-right, ethno-nationalism, white supremacists. It landed flat. Okay, and you know why?
Because you want no part of ethno-nationalists, no part of...
It's ridiculous. It's on the face of it.
You don't want any part of any of those people.
Well, first off, not only is it morally wrong, it's also totally irrelevant. Economic nationalism is what this country was built on, the American system, right? We go back to that. We look after our own. We look after our citizens. We look after our manufacturing base, and guess what? This country is going to be greater, more united, more powerful than it's ever been. And this is not astrophysics. Okay, and by the way, that's every nationality, every race, every religion, every sexual preference. As long as you're a citizen of our country, as long as you're an American citizen, you're part of this populist, economic, nationalist movement. And by the way, that's 65, 70% of the country. And we will get that. That's why, by the way, that's why Clinton's so broke. That's why the smart guys in the Democratic Party, they understand what's going on. Sherrod Brown gets this. Tim Ryan gets this. The guys of that weekend get this. The people around Schumer get this. They understand it. They're trying to revert it. They're trying to get the identity politics out. They're trying to run. The only question before us, is it going to be a left-wing populism or a right-wing
populism?
You've said that. And that is the question that will be answered in 2020.
All right, Mike, what'd you think?
Yeah, he's a smart guy. I like him.
You know, I've never been a fan of his, right? And I wasn't, and I don't, again, he's one of those guys who probably better off outside the White House than inside the White House. Ideas and issues, stuff like that, making it happen and navigating that, maybe not a strong suit. I went into listening to this not liking him, and I came out thinking he's a credible guy. You got to footnote him, but I mean, he's not a stupid guy.
No, he's not. He's a good guy.
All right.
I knew that from the start, though. I wasn't wrong.
All right, I want to play one more cut for you, and then get your thoughts.
What's the problem with the Democratic Party? The problem with the Democratic Party? Yeah. There's no Breitbart. The problem with the Democratic Party? They haven't had a civil war, and you know why? The financial crisis shows you that. Obama, and there were guys in that administration that understood that they had to go and hold these people on Wall Street accountable, and they blinked. And Bernie Sanders had every opportunity. He knew about the Clinton corruption. He knew about how the Wall Street crowd has a lock on the Democratic Party. And he did not have the guts to take on Hillary Clinton in that primary. He had every opportunity. He had all the information. He did not have the guts to take on. And the Democratic Party has not taken on.
The Huffington
Posts and the Rachel Maddows, they're just cheerleaders. They're just cheerleaders for the donor class of the Democratic Party. And until they vet that, until they have their civil war, they'll never be competitive. And by the way, there's guys over there that know that. They know that. They have the same problem with their establishment we have with ours.
What do you think, Mike?
Yeah. I mean, I watched that after you sent it to me. I watched that whole interview. And he is. He's a bright guy. He brings up great points that, you know, need to be heard. Problem is, you know, again, most of your left is going to say, that's not the truth. That's bullshit. He's a right-wing socialist.
Racist. And he talks about, in the interview, he talks about, hey, I grew up in Richmond, okay? Richmond, predominantly, you know, black, white. City, right? Went to racially mixed school, you know, and served in the United States Navy. So, like, where does that come from? And, you know, he said, and he talks about being a nationalist American, but I'm painted as a white nationalist. And so anyway, I want to play one more. This is where he talks about Hillary Clinton, the Bushes, Obama, Bush, and Clinton all being idiots. So hold on one second.
Speaking of your worldview, North Korea, there has been a lot of saber rattling on both sides. The North Koreans, the president, and some very stern statements by General Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, Joe Dunford, Chairman of Joint Chiefs. You have said repeatedly they're fooling themselves if they believe there is a military solution.
What I've said, the important point of what I said, is that the issue is between us and China. Okay? At the beginning of the summer, we were talking about do they
you
have
said there's no military solution.
And the solution
because
to
they'll Korea, kill too many people.
The solution to North Korea, and I've said this from day one, and this is an open literature, is China. At the beginning of the summer, I think it was Memorial Day, we were discussing whether they had an atomic bomb or not. Now on Labor Day, we're discussing whether they have a thermonuclear weapon, a hydrogen bomb. The complexity in building a nuclear weapon to a hydrogen bomb is not linear.
So in your judgment, we have no military option.
My suggestion and my recommendation is to solve the problem in Korea. You need to solve that problem with China. It is a client state of China.
And the president has tried to make deals with the Chinese to get them engaged. He even said he would go easy on trade if they would help with North Korea, correct?
And I think it's incumbent upon us, and particularly incumbent upon us on the right, to make sure that we have the president's back in continuing that, and maybe even doubling down on those efforts. That those efforts, what's going to lead? And look, I'm one guy. He's got the best advice in the world. Rex Tillerson, General Dunford, General Mattis. You could not have a higher quality national security team, and many people have said this in the establishment around the president. Okay, and they have information that I'm not privy to, and they have judgment, and they've been fighting, you know, wars.
So I'm saying
I have tremendous respect for them, but I'm just giving another alternative. That alternative to me is the logical alternative. The solution to Korea runs through Beijing, and we have to engage Beijing. And by the way, they're saying we're doing everything we can. It's not good enough. We have
being the Chinese.
We have tremendous leverage to force China.
What would you do?
I think we have tremendous leverage on sanctions. I think we have tremendous leverage in capital markets. I think we have tremendous leverage with Chinese banks. I think we have tremendous leverage with the Chinese financial institutions. We have tremendous leverage. Tremendous leverage.
Why haven't we used it?
You don't use this lightly. It would have a impact here in the United States. There's no doubt about it.
The quote he goes on to say is, I can't find it here, and is that the Clinton administration, the Bushes, they're all idiots. Look what they've done to the world, right? And you have these these hybrids.
Obama, too. Right.
And he said Obama's group was no different. He said you have, you know, the Condoleezza Rice, they hang out at Stanford, and the Don Rumsfeld, who they become fellows. Look what they've done to the planet. Look what they did to the Middle East. Look where they've taken the Middle East. Look where they've taken Europe because of what they did. And he said, idiots.
Yes.
And I said, you know what? I mean, I think that's the consistent theme you've heard from people come on the program is you destabilized the whole thing. You took a fraction of the troops that you needed, and everything that was prophesized in the war plan came to fruition because of Don Rumsfeld's arrogance. And so if you're telling me that I'm going to see more of it, you're on the verge of ruining my weekend.
You're going to see a snapshot of it that's really going to put it in perspective for you, and you're going to get really mad. You're going to call me, and you're going to... rah, 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 and then I'm going to go, okay. And then you're going to watch the end of it. And then the end, you're going to be like, wow. You're going to put it all together, and you're going to go, wow. Kind of shameful to be part of... that agencies just those, you know, agent people that took an oath to defend, you know, this country and its occupants. You know, that's the main thing is when you take an oath to the Constitution of the United States, it's not just that piece of paper. It's everything in America. It's the American idealist dream. It's everything. People, we fought those battles and we fought those places to make sure that they would never hurt America. You know, they came, they wanted a jihad, they came to us. They didn't come to the United States. We gave them their 77 virgins. You know, and I'm happy with that. But these guys, you watch them and some of these people and you're like, what oath did they take? You know, or I just you kind of just lose faith in the whole system that it doesn't work together. And I mean, it's stuff that we knew, but at that grand scale, you're like, oh my God.
Right. Let me read you an email. It's entitled, "What the Fuck?" Okay, so Friday, I've got used to the chubby, cooking guy. He doesn't show up today, and now this is where you guys are going to leave me? Are you fucking kidding me? What happened to Qantas Milpas or whatever the fuck that restaurant was in San Diego? Why are we doing this?
Don't use that language for that restaurant.
Rumsfeld, simply the name, makes my blood boil. Please stop. And if he's if he's in this goddamn thing, I'm not watching it. Because now I'm pissed on Friday and I'm about to go to lunch. And Mac, don't make any comment about me being a fat man. Okay? Because I'm not. I'm husky. Okay?
Is that Luke?
Thanks for nothing, assholes. Yeah. It's not my fault. Gunner did it. I didn't do it. I didn't bring up Rumsfeld and say it.
Okay. I'll leave you a good note.
Okay, leave me a good
note. Here's a good one. So, a buddy of mine that I served with gets out. He's living up there in Oklahoma City doing his job and fighting with the VA over some back issues that he suffered when he's in the Marine Corps. He gets out of the Marine Corps. He's a tall guy, 6'2", 6'3", and he's a built dude. I mean, this guy is jacked, 225, 230 pounds, all muscle, you know, very low body percentage. And the VA classifies him as obese, and that's why his back is the issue. So I get him in touch with Bob Nielsen, our friend from the East Coast, and he sent me a text the other day that made me feel really good. And he said, "Hey, just had one of the most incredible conversations with Bob. What a great guy. Thank you again." And then to know that, you know, Bob gave him the right information so he can get things fixed. And, you know, and it puts the faith in it because that's what we were talking. You know, he was losing faith in the system. And I said, "No, man, there's guys out there that care. And here's one of them." And that's why I asked you for his contact and gave it to him. And, you know, he called me back and said, "Yeah, you're right. Man, what a great guy. This guy, you know, you could have talked to him all day long." So hopefully things get better for him. And, again, kudos out to Bob for what he does. You know, and there are great guys like Bob around the United States that do all the heavy lifting for the right individuals.
I talked to Bob yesterday. Mike, just so you know, we're going to stand up all Navy radio here pretty soon. So if you know anybody, I know you know a lot of people, but keep your eyes and ears open for somebody who's retired who has a personality and is interested and would like to do something like this because I'm looking for somebody and certainly the Navy could use a place like this to discuss their issues. And I don't know if there's been a better time. But anyway, I was talking to Bob about that, and he was talking about your friend. And he said, "You know, Mac, we're going to one of the cool things about the network that I have," he says, "not only are we going to make a dent for him, but we're going to call this issue to the attention of people in the highest levels of the VA." And he said, and we're going to make sure that, again, stuff like this hopefully doesn't happen to other guys. And he said, I've contacted this guy, I've contacted this woman. And he said, so it's very cool. So, you know what, Mike, and that's one of the things. I mean, hell, you and I have been doing this for over a year now. And, you know, we've met a lot of different people. And so it's fun. Fun's the wrong word. It's pretty cool, as you talked about.
Satisfying.
Yeah. When you can, and you know what, and that's a lot of what we did in the Marine Corps, which is touching wires. Hey, you know, and we've had Mike Wishney on the program. The wire touching that goes on there is Mike struggling. Furness knows Gunner. Furness says, hey, man, you need to take this guy on. And also we do is take care of guys.
Right.
And make sure that they get to the place they need to get to. So it's fun to still be able to do that. So anyway, well, good on you, man. Thank you. Even if you did.
No, hey, thank you. Yeah. All right, man. You have a good weekend.
All right.
Try not to text me all weekend if the baseball game.
Well, I think I'm going to Las Cuantas Milpas tomorrow.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Boom. Me and Colleen headed to San Diego.
Hey, I want a picture of beforehand, and then I want to call me and tell me about your experience.
All right.
This is the only way I'm going to enjoy it. It's like listening to you reminisce, like, oh, my God, Gunner. You gotta be shitting me. You didn't tell me about this place. You know, why didn't you tell me about this place, you know, when we first met? That kind of thing.
All right. All right. All right, man. Have a good weekend. Thanks.
Yep. Bye.
There he is. The one and only Michael Musselman on a Friday. Let me read you a text message. Rumsfeld was the same as Robert McNamara, a lying sacks of shit. You know what? It's hard to not come to that conclusion. And both of them share a very, very common trait, and that is both arrogant, intellectually arrogant. Thought they knew more, thought they were better. Right. Can you imagine Don Rumsfeld saying, I don't even know who Tony Zinni is, when Zinni was critical of what he was doing? I don't even know who that guy is. What a piece of garbage. All right, send me a name if you know... You know, somebody retired, and they don't have to be retired from the military, but they, you know, they should have served for longer than an initial enlistment, and that's only so because they need to understand, you know, maybe the global mission, and you got to do a little bit more time. So, retired would be the best. And then maybe retired from a second job so they had the time to devote to it. But All Navy Radio, coming to a theater near you. My thanks to you for listening today. And I would, again, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It is, it's a sobering special. The History Channel, The Road to 9/11. You recognize a bunch of the people in there. Leon Panetta's in there. You see reporters that dug into that were either Pentagon reporters or they covered New York City and crossed paths with the story continuously over the years. The world's kind of gyrating again after another North Korean missile test. And again, it's not like they're not bad things, right? I mean, they are, but what they do is they simply push China and Russia. And they're going to either be pushed to do something or they're going to be pushed out of the way. So all the posturing and all the nonsense. Every time he launches a missile, my own opinion is it benefits us. Because Russia and China are put under a hotter spotlight of what are you going to do by the community of world nations. So there you have it. Have a great weekend. Interesting events tonight in Berkeley. Now, you should see this guy. This guy's about, Ben Shapiro is about the most non-threatening human being. So free speech on trial in Berkeley, California tonight. So we'll see what happens there. That'll be interesting. And again, hopefully the whatever protests happen in St. Louis will be peaceful. I don't understand all the facts in that case, but murder in the first degree is not the easiest charge to go ahead and to prove. Have a great weekend. We will see you Monday morning. On Friday, All Marine Radio, soon to be partnered with All Navy Radio. Coming at you.